is tragic that the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary.
Impeachment could put the president of the United States on trial in the Senate. This is Thursday, the 19th of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming ahead, we take you to Delhi to talk about a new law that has led to massive protests across India. The United States is having its problems reaching agreement with South Korea. And we have a decision made by a U.S. aircraft company that has ramifications for the future. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. House of Representatives headed Wednesday toward impeaching President Donald Trump, accusing him of abusing the power of the presidency to benefit himself politically and then obstructing Congress as it investigated his actions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opened hours of debate, telling lawmakers that Trump, by pressing Ukraine to investigate one of his chief 2020 Democratic rivals, former Vice President Joe Biden, and then standing in the way of a congressional investigation, quote, gave us no choice but to pursue his impeachment.
If we do not act now, we would be derelict in our duty. It is tragic that the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice.
President Trump, as is his style, did not mince words.
This has been a total sham from the beginning. Everybody knows it.
Covering this historic impeachment procedure is VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, where are we now as far as the process of impeachment is concerned?
Well, we are in about hour 5 of the full floor debate on articles of impeachment. We have just about 2.5-3 more hours to go by our calculations up here. And it has been traumatic at certain points and tedious at others, as most things with the House tend to be up here.
So what exactly is happening from what I have seen on our, it's all over television, obviously, and radio, first one Democrat saying why he or she is going to vote for impeachment, and then a Republican saying why or not he or she will not vote for impeachment. And that's all you pretty much heard, right?
You've pretty much summed up what's been happening up here for the last 5 or so hours. But what it really is a chance for each of the members to really go on the record with what will be one of the most important votes, if not the most important vote, of their political careers. You know, impeachment only happens rarely in American political history, once in a generation in the modern era, and this is one of the most significant decisions a member of Congress will ever make. So this really is their opportunity to come to the House floor, to be in the eye of the United States, of the American public, and really sort out their reasons why they're voting for or against impeachment.
Catherine, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had a word for everybody who was taking part in this proceedings in that this was a very serious, very sad situation. Has that carried out? Has that order been carried out?
So far, it absolutely has. And, you know, what we heard was that Speaker Pelosi warned members, absolutely no gloating, no clapping. When that vote finally happens later on this evening, they are going to remain somber, which has been the marching orders all along, is that Speaker Pelosi did not want to make this move. She considers it one of the most serious moves a speaker can make, and that she really had to be dragged into it because of the seriousness of Trump's actions. She wants the whole country to understand that the members, at least the Democratic ones, don't take this lightly.
A vote in favor of impeachment is expected to pass from the House. So what happens then? Then it goes to the Senate, right?
Right, although we're having a little bit of trouble with that up here right now. There's some discussion, a very wonky procedural discussion, that Speaker Pelosi could hold back those articles of impeachment. She has to transmit them to the U.S. Senate. But as some of our listeners may know, in the past couple of days, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is a Republican ally of the president, has really been pushing back against Senate Democrats on some of the rules, the ground rules of how that impeachment trial will run. Speaker Pelosi is considering not transmitting those articles of impeachment over until she gets what she wants out of McConnell.
Well, if that's possible, I have been getting some messages from some listeners saying, why go through all of this? We already know what's going to happen, right? So why are we doing this?
That's a good question on the part of your listeners, and I think that it's something that American citizens themselves, who are exhausted by some of the partisan fighting in this country the past few years, are asking. But what we have to do is take a step back from the social media, step back from the cable news, all of those discussions that we have here, and take a look at how the founders of the United States set up this system. They wanted the U.S. president to be held accountable for his or someday her actions, and they set it up so that the U.S. Congress, so that lawmakers would have a way of doing that. If that system breaks down, then some of the core components of the United States are lost. We still need to run through these systems so that the country can ask ourselves, you know, what do we expect of a U.S. president? What behavior do we find acceptable or not acceptable? And I think this whole process has really got that discussion going.
That's Catherine Gibson, congressional correspondent for The Voice of America. As always, Catherine, thank you.
You're so welcome.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Australians experienced their hottest day on record this week, and temperatures could soon climb even higher, say the weather people. Unknown gunmen in Pakistan killed two people and two police officers guarding polio vaccinators Wednesday during a national immunization campaign in a country where the crippling disease remains endemic. Japanese journalist Shiori Ito, who won her civil lawsuit seeking damages from a prominent reporter she says raped her, said her pain will not ease, but hopes her case will set a new standard at a news conference on Wednesday. At least six people were killed, dozens injured Wednesday when a double-decker bus crashed in Hong Kong. Read and watch more at VOA Asia Facebook. India's Supreme Court on Wednesday postponed hearing pleas challenging the constitutionality of a new citizenship law that has sparked opposition and massive protest across the country. The court said it would consider the pleas on January 22nd. Protest and widespread condemnation have been growing against the Citizenship Amendment Act, with demonstrators erupting in India over the last week. The new law applies to Hindus, Christians, and other religious minorities who are in India illegally, but can demonstrate religious persecution in Muslim-majority Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. It does not apply to Muslims. Palki Sharma is the executive editor and TV anchor at WEON TV in New Delhi. Palki, tell us what really is going on as far as how you see it on an everyday basis.
There are two sets of protests happening in India. One is in the northeast of India, where people in Assam and other states do not want any immigrants, Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, any religion. They just do not want immigrants because they say it puts a lot of stress on their resources and it changes the demographic of the state, whereby the original inhabitants of the state become a minority. They want no immigrants. The rest of India is protesting because they see this law, this amendment, as a challenge to India's secular fabric. They say that the exclusion of Muslim immigrants does not sit well with a secular India, and that is not the right way to go about it.
And apparently it does not sit very well with the rest of the world. Is that correct?
So it appears. From Pakistan to Bangladesh to even the U.S., everyone has taken this opportunity, used this opportunity to comment on what India is doing, and as we said in our broadcast as well today, that India loses its moral authority. India has always taken pride in the fact that it has a healthy mix of different communities, different religions, living peacefully together, coexisting together. This decision puts a question mark on that, even though the government is going out of its way to tell everyone that this is not an anti-Muslim law. that everyone, all religions, all nationalities, all kinds of people can still apply for citizenship, that this amendment is only for the minorities of three countries. And since these three countries are Muslim majority countries, Muslims have been excluded. But that's not how the political opposition sees it.
Well, does that mean that some Muslims can still apply and still gain citizenship?
All Muslims can apply. The old citizenship law says that you will take 11 years to become a naturalized citizen of India. It's a long procedure. The new law says for people of specific religions, Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jains, Parsis, and Christians, if you apply under the new law, you will take 6 years to become citizens of India. But that is not to say that people of other countries, other nationalities, other religions, including Muslims, cannot apply. They can still apply. They will just take longer to become Indian citizens if they fulfill other criteria.
Does the leader of India, Narendra Modi, want India to be a Hindu nation?
Well, that's what his critics say. When he came to power, he said that I will be everyone's president, Hindus and Muslims, those who voted for me and those who did not vote for me. His party is seen as a party that is supported by the Hindu majority in this country. But the 2019 election saw Narendra Modi winning in such a big way, even in areas which are Muslim dominated. So it was being said that he has transcended that divide of caste and religion that used to be the hallmark of Indian elections. Now it is being said that his critics say that he is finishing the unfinished agenda of his right-wing party. But that is just a charge. There is no way that as an independent journalist I can endorse that.
India's Supreme Court has postponed hearing pleas challenging the constitutionality of the new law, said it would consider the pleas on January 22nd. Does that mean we see more and more protests? And what about the reaction to those protests, which many are saying are overly violent?
There is a fear, yes, that these protests will be fueled further by statements from all sides, from all political parties. So I don't see this simmering down anytime soon because no side seems to be ready to backtrack. The government is issuing threats. At the same time, the Prime Minister says, I urge everyone to maintain calm. But he's also said just before that, that we will identify the protesters by their clothes, which is a statement that was not taken very well by the people, by the protesters. So it is going to be very hard to bring the tone down unless the government reaches out to some of these people and allays their fears. Yes, the matter has gone to Supreme Court, but it's going to be very hard for the court as well to dismiss a legislation that has been passed overwhelmingly by both houses of the Indian Parliament.
Palki, thank you for taking the time, and hopefully we can talk again in the near future.
Thank you very much. Good to be on the show.
Happening now in Asia, the parents of Otto Warmbier, the American student who died after 17 months in a North Korean prison, hailed Wednesday new congressional legislation passed in their son's name that calls for further sanctions on Pyongyang. Stay up to date with VOA. You are listening to VOA Asia. We are indeed happy you are with us. The latest attempt by U.S. and South Korean negotiators to reach a deal on sharing defense costs ended without agreement on Wednesday. But the senior U.S. negotiator, James DeHart, said Washington was committed to finding a solution that met both sides.
What we want is an agreement that is mutually acceptable, an agreement that the government of Korea will find value in, an agreement that will be supported by the National Assembly, and we respect very much the role of the National Assembly in providing its consent to any agreement, and also an agreement that will be welcomed and supported by the people of the Republic of Korea.
DeHart was speaking in Seoul after the fifth round of talks to resolve the issue. The current agreement on cost sharing is set to expire at the end of the year. DeHart emphasized the U.S. government wants all of its allies to pay their fair share, not just South Korea.
This question of burden sharing is not just about the Republic of Korea, but as our president has said, We think that we need fair and equitable burden sharing with all of our allies around the world. And so we have been pursuing that with many governments around the world.
Coming up, fewer Boeing 737 aircraft might be in your immediate future, even after the planes are cleared to fly. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hong Kong football fans booed as the Chinese national anthem was played Wednesday before their teams clashed with China in South Korea, as the political turmoil that has gripped the former British colony spilled over into the sports world. By the way, China won the game 2-0. You are in tune with VOA Asia. Boeing is confirming that it will suspend the production of its 737 MAX jetliner next month, as regulators made it clear that they will not approve the jet's return to service by the end of the year. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on the potential impact of that move.
The move to suspend production of its best-selling 737 MAX came days after the head of the Federal Aviation Administration said no to recertification of the jetliner until possibly sometime next year. That news raised concerns for some workers right before the holidays.
Merry Christmas, right?
For now, the company says there would be no layoffs of its 12,000 employees during the production freeze. Meanwhile, suspending production of a commercial aircraft will have a major impact on multiple levels, analysts say.
Suspending production of a commercial aircraft, and we don't know how long that would be, is really going to create some chaos for the airlines that are involved in this, as well as the 600 or so companies that are part of the 737 MAX supply chain and Boeing itself. It's going to have substantial impact on the U.S. economy. And as it already has, I think, will affect our trade deficit.
Boeing officials say they decided to stop production in part because the FAA declined to certify the aircraft at least until 2020. The 737 MAX had been grounded since March after two separate fatal crashes, one in Indonesia and another one in Ethiopia, that killed nearly 350 people.
Boeing made a lot of missteps, starting with the design of the airplane, and there was some early signals that it needed some fixes, and those were missed by lots of people.
Aviation expert Joe Schweiderman says for Boeing, this is going to be a tough juggling act.
Like, this is a core of their operation, the 737 MAX, and you have lots of workers who are trained to do one thing and have them do another thing now. As you try to figure out when you're going to start, it's going to take some fancy footwork.
CEO Dennis Muilenburg had his chairmanship stripped from him because of questionable decisions he made ahead of the two crashes. He also testified before Congress about both incidences.
And I want to convey our absolute commitment to safety, our commitment to learning, our commitment to rebuilding the public's confidence in what we do, and to preventing accidents from like this from ever happening again.
But critics say he's been slow to accept blame for software failures that safety inspectors say contributed to both crashes. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
A news break from VOA Asia. Washington is appealing a World Trade Organization ruling in a dispute over import duties on Indian steel products, that despite having recently forced the WTO appeals unit to suspend its own operations. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest kinds there is because it's almost always found too late. This cancer is hard to detect, and symptoms only show up when the cancer is advanced. But as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, researchers are beginning to make inroads in this most difficult-to-diagnose disease.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has survived pancreatic cancer, not once, but twice. Hers was found early, which is rare. The pancreas is an important organ that produces insulin, a hormone that regulates the body's blood sugar. But the pancreas is hard to see. It's at the back of the abdomen, covered by the stomach and the liver. That's why doctors can't detect early tumors during routine physical exams. Dr. Somashekhar Krishna is an endocrinologist who says that's why only 9% of patients diagnosed with pancreatic cancer are alive 5 years after diagnosis.
The cancer doesn't produce any symptoms early on.
Patricia Beatty likes playing cards with her children. She went to the hospital with what she thought was a stomach virus. During a scan of her stomach, the doctor found a cyst.
He told me that that the cyst was there and that it was precancerous.
Pancreatic cancer develops in one of two ways. It either starts as a cancerous tumor or it starts when a cyst changes and becomes cancerous. The difference between a tumor and the cyst is that the tumor is firm, while a pancreatic cyst is filled with fluid. Cysts on the pancreas are common. Most are, fortunately, benign. Doctors can test fluid from inside the cyst, but it's hard to tell which cysts will develop into cancer. Cancerous tumors or cysts can be detected with sonograms or other diagnostic imaging tools. But imaging is so expensive, it can't be used as a regular screening device. Dr. Krishna at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center led a study of a new diagnostic method that gives doctors a microscopic view of the cyst wall. He says his study showed this virtual biopsy is highly accurate.
We can diagnose cysts with accuracy of 96% to 97%.
The procedure uses a tiny scope that emits a laser light to produce a cellular image of the inside of the cyst.
Looking at the wall, the pattern, the image pattern which comes from the cyst wall, which comes as a direct video feed in real time, we can conclude what the diagnosis is.
Krishna and others are training doctors at hospitals across the U.S. to use this new technology so they can more accurately diagnose precancerous cysts. This can save lives, but the procedure will only be used after an MRI or a sonogram is ordered for another reason, so the cancer will still grow silently in most people until it's too late to save them. Krishna told VOA that a blood test is the most logical way to find pancreatic cancer early. The problem is it hasn't been developed yet, although researchers are working on it. As for Patricia Beatty, she's cancer-free because this new diagnostic tool found her cyst before it became malignant and spread. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to a new study published in the Astronomical Journal, about 3.5 million years ago, which on a galactic scale is quite recent, there was a colossal explosion of energy at the center of the Milky Way. The explosion, which scientists call a Seyfert flare, sent out powerful cone-shaped beams of radiation that sliced through our galaxy and a good distance into deep space. The researchers say the flare was so powerful that it affected the Magellanic Stream some 200,000 light-years from the Milky Way. Study authors who used data from the Hubble Space Telescope to make their findings estimate the blast lasted for about 300,000 years. The research team behind the study says this explosion was too enormous to have been set off by anything other than nuclear activity associated with the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way, known as Sagittarius A star. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. In other words, we are all over the place. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zineb Abdelrahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.